Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, November 13th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So first, about me. My energy goes up and down. The thing that I have to struggle with the most is maintaining energy. I have good energy, I push myself too hard, and the next day I'm exhausted. The biggest thing that seems to exhaust me, unfortunately, is my work day. So I'm still trying to figure out how to make myself feel better through the whole work day. The thing that seems to be the hardest is that I sit, talk with people, and I'm on screens for many, many hours, and that's exhausting, and without a break. If I take a break, it means that I go home later, and then I'm exhausted. So the exhaustion usually happens at the other end, and it's not just I feel tired like I want to go to sleep. I'm tired and wired and even a little shaky. It's like a chronic fatigue kind of tiredness. And fortunately, it doesn't last for days and days. If I take it easy the next day, I can usually get out of it. So for example, if I work 2 days in a row, like on a Thursday and Friday, I see patients, and then Saturday morning, I'm still groggy and kind of out of it. And I'm trying to work on that. What I really need to do is shut it down earlier on Friday. I think that will help. And so I tend to like try to get stuff done until it's time to relax at night, which is too late at night. And just shutting it down at 8 o'clock at night is too late. I need rest, at least a break earlier in the day, and then maybe get a couple things done. So anyway, this is something I try to let people know. People tell me that they're extremely exhausted and they're not resting because they feel like if they rest, they're not doing anything because there's always something to be done. And I said, well, you can still do all the things that you need to do. You just need breaks in between them, and don't get attached to doing everything all in one day. That your rest is just as important as anything that you do, and you're going to be healthier and feel better if you get rest in between the things that you do. And whatever you do, you're going to be more efficient when you do it if you get rest in between. I mean, when we talk about this in terms of exercise, we don't like doing long, medium, or hard cardio for extensive amounts of time is not really good for you because you're in high cortisol for all that time, and high cortisol breaks you down. So the best thing to do is to push your cortisol and then have a good rest, and then push your cortisol and then have a good rest, because that trains you to be more efficient when you're active, and then the rest helps you to recover, and then you get to recover and rebuild your tissues, you rebuild your lungs, you rebuild your heart. You can use the nutrients that you need to manage your energy cells, and they get to reset. If they're always cranking, they never get to reset. And so if you get a reset through the day, you're going to be less tired at the end of the day because you're not completely depleted and I need to listen to my own advice pretty much. So haven't been having much in the way of shakes, very minor occasionally, and I think it's when I'm exhausted. That's when that happens. So I pushed myself yesterday because there was a lot of holiday shopping to do. I did a whole bunch of things yesterday, and today I'm feeling it. I'm feeling kind of groggy. Fortunately, today I don't have that much to do, and hopefully I'll be okay. So that's my latest thing. I advise you that rest is so important. It's really good to rest, and we're getting into a period of the year where it's there's a lot to do. You know, you're probably preparing for the holidays, holiday shopping, holiday travel, holiday purchases, holiday gatherings. There's a lot of things going on at a time of year where it's getting darker and darker by the day. We're losing minutes both in the morning and the evening, so the days are getting shorter. The sun is setting, what, I don't even know, at like 4:30 now? What time is the sunset now? It's very early.
Early.
Yeah, and it's going to get earlier and earlier. For your information, and I'll remind you closer to the time, there is a sunset nadir. So a nadir means a low point. So well, there's a sunset nadir, and the nadir is before the solstice. So, and I'm fascinated by this because I talk about it every year. So we're going to continue to lose minutes until the 2nd of December. And then on December 2nd, the sun in Mansfield Center, it may be different where you live depending on how far east or west you are and how far north or south you are. But in Mansfield Center, the sun will set at 4:16 p.m. on December 2nd, and it will continue to do that through December 13th. On December 14th, it will set at 4:17 p.m., and we will start gaining minutes at the end of the day on December 14th, and that's a week before the solstice. So that's interesting how that happens. We will unfortunately continue to lose minutes in the morning, which will continue at a rate that will continue to make the day shorter and shorter until we have that shortest day on December 21st. And then the days will get longer. That we are going to continue to lose minutes in the morning through, I have to look at the date, I think it's through December 29th. And then December 29th, we hit the sunrise zenith, which is around here is going to be something like 7:18 a.m. And it's going to stay there through, I have to look at the exact date. It's something like January 7th or 8th. It stays there, and then you start gaining minutes in the morning, and then you're gaining minutes at either end of the day. But you start gaining minutes at the end of the day on December 14th. So the sun will start setting later on December 14th. So fear not, that's on its way. It'll be here before you know it. I mean, we are just a month and a half from Christmas, and we are a couple of weeks from Thanksgiving. It's pretty amazing. Thanksgiving is 2 weeks from Thursday.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Too soon.
Too soon. I know. Too soon. But ready. Thanksgiving is as late as it can be, which means it's on my...
Guess what? Your birthday.
Right. I know. Thanksgiving is on my birthday this year. And the year I was born, Thanksgiving was on my birthday. So this is the days of the week are the same as they were in 1963. So the Kennedy assassination was Friday, November 22nd of 1963. So this is that same year setup. Anyway, so that's kind of interesting. And we're going to do the Manchester Road Race, and we're going to walk.
Yes, we will.
So that was interesting. It's been really dry. We have a drought. We finally got some rain last night. I don't know if the rain was enough to do very much. Maybe it did a little. I did a rail trail ride yesterday through North Windham. I just did an easy rail trail ride out and back to the Heron Pond and then out and back to Parker Southbrook. And when I was out in North Windham, I could smell the smoke still, the fire still going, unfortunately. So there's brush fires in a lot of places. There may be one near you, and just be real careful when you're out there not to drop, not to spark anything. Hunting is a hard thing right now because if you spark, it can spark a fire. There's a burn ban and there's a barbecue ban and there's a pit fire ban right now because we're in a drought. So that's concerning. And then if you live closer to New Jersey, there's brush fires in New Jersey. And I like to listen to Philadelphia radio. I have a favorite radio station in Philly, and they are talking about smelling the smoke and getting the smoke in Pennsylvania from New Jersey because there's brush fires probably in the Pine Barrens. So anyway, all right. So in terms of Ron, this is kind of interesting. We are still wondering if he has Lyme disease. We're waiting to get a kit for an in-depth Lyme disease test or tick-borne illness test. And so once we get the results of that, we'll let you know and we'll figure out what we're going to do for him. In the meantime, Ron was deciding, what if I have peripheral artery disease? What if I actually, it seems like he has symptoms that could be intermittent claudication. So I was going to talk about that. And you thought that because the symptoms, you know, you get pain in your legs on exertion.
Right.
So if you, and then it gets better if you rest. And that is actually a symptom of intermittent claudication. So it is possible that's what's going on. So intermittent claudication is specifically when you have atherosclerosis and partial blockage of the femoral artery, and so you get pain on exertion when you need a big load of blood to get into the muscles of the legs. That happens on exertion, and so you get pain. You get pain in the legs because the muscles are trying to work, and they're not getting enough circulation, so they become ischemic and painful. Ischemic means they don't have enough oxygen to function. And so that's a possibility. We're looking at that, and I don't know if you put in a note to your doctor or where you're at with that. You did. Mm. Yeah. So you put a note to your primary or to your cardiologist or both? Or
cardiologist.
Right. So he put in a note to his cardiologist, and so hopefully he can get tested for that. And the testing for intermittent claudication, did you look at it? Because it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. It's ultrasound.
Yeah.
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 And then,
it should be pretty simple.
Right.
Just got to get it arranged.
And then the clearing of the intermittent claudication is also not extremely invasive. I mean, they have to
it's a same day thing. You go
right.
in and they go scope up through your arteries.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And they either go in through your arm or your leg.
Groin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or your groin. And that's how they do it.
Right.
So, boy, if that would work.
That would be great if
that's
all
like
it is.
An instant fix.
Right. But then you'd have to talk to him about, do I have to be on cholesterol meds?
Right.
So anyway, I wanted to talk more about intermittent claudication and what that's all about. It's a subset of peripheral artery disease where you have blockages in not the coronary arteries, but other arteries in your body. So intermittent claudication refers to an aching pain in your legs when you walk or exercise and goes away with rest, can affect your calf, your hips, your thighs, your buttocks, even the arches of your feet. It's also called vascular claudication. The pain arises when the arteries that supply blood to your legs are narrowed or blocked, and it's an early symptom of peripheral artery disease. So you have to get treated so you stop the progression of it. Peripheral artery disease affects about 8.5 million Americans, according to the CDC. But most people are undiagnosed and don't have symptoms, and it's estimated about 20% of the population over 65 has it due to peripheral artery disease. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So claudication comes from a Latin verb, claudicare, which means to limp. Did you know that? So mm-hmm. The symptoms are aching, cramping, numbness, weakness, heaviness, and fatigue.
Yeah, got all that.
I know. Your pain can be severe enough to limit how much you walk or exercise. And if the cause is peripheral artery disease, resting for 10 minutes alleviates the pain because your resting muscles don't need as much blood flow.
Right.
And it's caused by a blockage of the arteries that supply blood to your legs and elsewhere, peripherally meaning not the heart. And plaque accumulates on the walls of your arteries. They're a combination of substances. They're made of fat, cholesterol, and calcium. And the plaques narrow and damage the arteries, which decreases blood flow and decreases the oxygen to your muscle. I'm really liking having this timer here. It's so great. As I can see, it's right there.
That's good.
Yeah.
Very nice here. Very nice.
And there are other causes. If you have spinal stenosis, that can put pressure on the nerves as the spaces within your spine. So that's other causes besides atherosclerosis. Nerve root compression from a herniated disc can cause it. Peripheral neuropathy associated with diabetes, which can occur along with it and along with the symptoms caused by peripheral artery disease. Arthritis in your hip, knee, or ankle. Compartment syndrome when pressure builds up in the leg muscles during exercise. A muscle strain can cause it. A Baker cyst can cause it. So Baker cyst is a swelling of the bursa behind fluid-filled sac, the synovial sac.
Yep.
With cartilage behind your knee. If you change your shoe height, you can get intermittent claudication. A DVT, a deep venous thrombosis, which is a blood clot deep in your leg vein.
Mm-hmm.
Fibrosis of the external iliac artery, which is the artery that supplies blood to your leg. So fibrosis, which is not necessarily atherosclerosis. Something called fibromuscular dysplasia, which is a non-inflammatory blood vessel disease that causes, so you've a growth in an arterial wall.
Mm.
And then vasculitides, which are conditions that cause inflammation and death of blood vessels. Things like giant cell arteritis, There's Takayasu's arteritis, Berger's disease, polyarteritis nodosa, or Behcet's disease. So these are specific inflammatory conditions of the blood vessels, which can be concomitant with autoimmune disease. Young people can get popliteal entrapment, which is compression of the main artery behind the knee, or a cyst formation in the main artery behind the knee, or persistent sciatic artery, which continues into the thigh. It gets diagnosed when you're asked about your symptoms and medical history. They'll want to know when you feel the pain, and whether you feel the pain in your muscle and not your bone or joint, and that it always occurs after you walk a certain distance and goes away after you rest for 10 minutes or so. How far you can walk with pain may indicate the severity. So your pain goes away after you rest for, a minute or two?
It doesn't take even that long.
Right.
It's just, you know, I climb to the top of the stairs. I have severe pain. I wait about 10 seconds, and then it goes away, and I'm fine.
That's interesting.
So which it's not,
makes us question it, because that's not a long time.
No.
I mean, if you have chronic Lyme disease can reduce your energy and go after the cells in your muscles, and you have reduced mitochondrial function, and mm-hmm. it can cause that. So we don't know. So anyway, I think it's a great idea for you to get tested for intermittent claudication and peripheral artery disease.
But on the other side of that, if I'm going up a very, very long hill on my bicycle, I have to stop. I can't endure the pain.
Right.
That's involved with it, and the fatigue that's involved with it.
Right.
I have done that, and I have gone through some rides where I actually just bear with it and go through it, but I'm just like, I'm horribly blown out afterwards.
Yeah.
It just really hurts.
Yeah. So you're going to get this checked.
We'll get it
which
checked.
Is a good thing. When you have pain from spinal stenosis, it feels like weakness in your legs because you have nerve compression and the nerves aren't getting the muscles to fire, which is different from pain. If you have pain from irritation from a nerve root, it'll start in your low back and radiate down your leg, and resting may or may not give relief. And, you know, so if you have femoral neuralgia or sciatic nerve pain, that it'll feel like that. Pain from hip arthritis is related to weight bearing and activity. Inflammatory arthritic pain can be continuous with swelling, tenderness, or heat in the affected area. When you have a Baker's cyst, you're going to have swelling and tenderness behind your knee because it's a swelling of the bursa, the cushioning sac behind your knee. And it's worse from activity and not relieved by resting. So yours is relieved by resting, which makes me concerned that this is what you have. Mm. The thing is, the biggest risk factor is smoking.
Yeah, no, I don't do that.
I know. And you haven't, so you haven't smoked significantly in, I guess, ever. You secondhand smoked when you were a kid.
Right.
Right. Exactly. So did I. And then when you get older, you're more likely to get it. And there's a twofold increase for every 10-year increase in age. If you have diabetes, if you have hypertension, you have high cholesterol, you have reduced kidney function. And African Americans are more likely to get, the rates are about twice for African Americans than non-African Americans. There's lesser risk factors that are genetic and other blood factors. So if you have an elevated C-reactive protein, elevated fibrinogen, and there are genetic factors, if you have high homocysteine, and then being obese can also increase the likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor gives you a physical exam, may use some tests to confirm whether you have intermittent claudication or other conditions. And if you're a candidate for surgery, the doctor will order imaging tests. So what they do is the ankle brachial index. This test used ultrasound imaging to measure and compare your arterial blood pressure at your ankle and arm. The ratio of ankle systolic blood pressure to arm systolic pressure indicates the severity. So if you want to have an ankle brachial index of 1 to 1.4, and the lower the number gets, the more severe the PAD is considered. And they use ultrasound imaging to compare it. So it's a very non-invasive test, and it may be sufficient to diagnose PAD. And they can also, determine if the intermittent claudication is caused by a spinal problem, and they'll look at your gait and your spinal nerves and the ankle of your if the angle of your ankle and knee are different if you have it. And then, of course, if you have peripheral artery disease, your skin will be cooler. You may have wounds that don't heal. You may have burning, aching feet when you're resting. You don't have any of these, right? Shiny skin and absence of hair. Pale skin when your leg is elevated. Bruise in your leg artery, that we listen to your leg arteries when you hear rushing. We hear a rushing sound. Mm-hmm. Abnormal capillary refill time. So if we press on your leg, it stays white for too long. Or if we press on the on your toenails.
I do have tingling in the toes, though.
Yes, that's right. You have had some tingling in your toes. Mm-hmm. So treatment depends on the underlying cause. You're just going to have to stop smoking.
You're right.
And get your blood pressure down.
Right. No.
Right.
Not,
no. I'm not, that's smoking. Not an issue. I know.
Neither of those
are an issue. Right. If you do have high cholesterol, that's something you're supposed to work on, although your cholesterol isn't particularly high. I know they think it is, but I don't think it's.
Right.
You need to begin a supervised exercise program.
Oh, come on.
Exactly. I know. And then you have to eat a balanced, healthy diet. Now, eating lower carbohydrate is helpful. Because you'll need to lose a little bit of weight.
No.
I know.
I don't have any weight to lose.
I know. You
don't. That's why this whole thing is so suspicious, because I don't fit into most of the categories.
Yeah, the only thing
that
is
are that, the flags.
I know. The only thing you fit into is that you like to make plaque, that your body likes to make
right,
plaque.
Cardiovascular disease.
Right, exactly. Right. The only two things you got going on are that your body, you have a genetic problem, and that you eat a lot of carbohydrate. So
right.
So cutting back on the carbohydrates is going to help. And by cutting back on the carbohydrates, I just mean sugar. I mean, if you continue to eat a bit of bread and rice and stuff like that, it's probably not a big deal. Other treatments can be vascular. So you may get drugs to lower your blood pressure. You're not going to get blood pressure lowering drugs. But if you have high blood pressure, you'll get some. But not him. They may also prescribe drugs to improve blood flow to your legs, like antiplatelet drugs. So blood thinners. Mm-hmm. You're already taking aspirin. I don't know if they'd switch you to something like clopidogrel or one of the 10A inhibitors. More likely, probably clopidogrel. That would be my guess if they offered that. And then you're going to have to deal with bruising and stuff. Wait. And then they could do vascular bypass surgery to revascularize your leg arteries. Mm. Percutaneous transluminal peripheral arterial angioplasty helps to unblock peripheral arteries. And they may also, you may get stents. So that's another thing that's
right.
done.
It is another thing.
The surgeries improve blood flow, but effects may not last and may be associated with higher death rates.
Not good.
So treatment for other causes of intermittent claudication, of course, there are going to be leg rest, anti-inflammatory drugs, pain medication, PT, physical therapy, and sometimes surgery. So exercises. Walk 30 minutes at least 3 times a week. Rest near your highest pain point. And you do all these things. Yeah. Follow the program because you're still exercising. I mean, you're exercising. You're just, the problem is load. It's not necessarily that you, because you're able to walk as long as it's flat, and you're able to ride your bike as long as you don't put a lot of load on the bike.
It's just putting any kind of load or pressure on my legs.
Yeah.
It really causes a problem. I can ride my bike indoors on a trainer or a spin bike as long as I don't push beyond my FTP.
Right.
My fitness threshold.
Yeah.
And even if I do ride at my fitness threshold for a while, it starts to catch up with me.
Yeah.
But primarily, I've been able to ride right at my normal wattage numbers for my fitness threshold. It's just when I go over that.
Right.
And try to get up over, 200 watts.
Yeah.
That everything starts shutting down.
It hurts, yeah.
So I can't, the frustrating part about it is I can't push my heart rate up above zone 3.
Right.
Because even at zone 3, I can't stay there very long.
Right.
But I could ride in zone 2 forever.
Right.
Which is, if you if people that are listening don't understand heart rate zones, that's a pretty low zone, basically. It's about 70% of your max.
So the thing is, if you have PAD, it's not severe, and it is possible. I wonder if they would be willing, like if it does turn out that that's what you have, if they would be willing to do a non-invasive surgical intervention. Because if they did it, that would probably do it, and you'd be fine for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would push you to take some kind of cholesterol lowering. But it is possible if this is this happened, like you kind of came. It's so weird because you were taking Repatha, which is supposed to lower your cholesterol, and that's when it happened. And we've been under the assumption that you had muscle damage from the Repatha,
and that might not be it. In which case, you know, I'll have to go back on that to drop my cholesterol down, and it may or may not be a problem.
Right. But we have to find out.
But we need to figure out what's causing this before I go to that. Right. That's the discussion I'm having now with my cardiologist.
So it's fine. And I think it's fine to go in both directions to see if you have chronic Lyme or chronic tick-borne illness as well as this. Because, you know, if you have either or both, it bears taking care of. So the thing is, the outlook... If it's a Baker cyst, that can be treated and cured. You can drain Baker cysts. And if it's PAD, it's treatable but not curable. If you get PT, you can improve your walking distance. So getting regular exercise will improve your fitness. Drugs and surgery can treat PAD and minimize the risk factors. And then aggressive treatment to minimize risk factors is a good thing. So the most important treatment for any cardiovascular disease. As many as 90% of people with intermittent claudication have cardiovascular. Well, we already know you have that, had that. Mm. And the 5-year mortality rate for intermittent claudication from all causes is 30%. So of those deaths, an estimated 70 to 80 can be attributed to cardiovascular disease. So that's only 30%, which means there's a 70% survival rate. So you're unlikely to die of this.
Okay.
Yeah, you're more unlikely to die of it.
Yeah, no, I don't plan on that.
No.
Of course, I didn't plan on having a quadruple bypass and being the Walking Dead guy either, but, you know. Nobody does.
So, so there is L'chaim.
Yeah. That.
There is natural treatment for intermittent claudication. One of the things that we like to offer is ginkgo biloba. So whenever we go to the farmer's market or to town hall, I'm like, look, Ron, ginkgo trees. Because they planted a lot of ginkgo trees in stores. And Ron's always like, what's that? You know, so the ginkgo trees, they plant them in the sidewalk along town hall and also, I think, at E.O. Smith. And also on the streets in downtown stores, there's a lot of ginkgo trees. And I think the reason they do that is because ginkgo trees tend to pull pollution. They're good things to have for the environment. They tend to pull pollution out of the air and improve air quality. So they improve the circulation of the air, and they improve the circulation of you. So it's more effective than placebo for peripheral artery disease patients who have intermittent claudication. And that was a systemic review published back in 2005. In 2008, there was a clinical trial with 62 adults with PAD, and researchers found that treating with ginkgo produced a modest but insignificant increase in widening of the blood vessels. But it might be worth taking. It's a nice thing to help. We always think of ginkgo as something that improves circulation. If your vitamin D is too low, that can increase your risk for PAD. So if you haven't had your vitamin D checked lately, please have it checked. And it's all back and forth in terms of how much what your vitamin D level should be. I had heard from one colleague that research showed that if you get, that you only need to be at as much as 45 nanograms per milliliter. And then I talked to my naturopath there's other research that you want to see your vitamin D levels much higher if you want to fight viruses. And I feel like the answer is somewhere in between. I like my patients to be at least in the 50s. I let them run in the 50s, especially women. Men could run a little bit lower, but I like to see most people in the 50s. And I'm running in the 40s myself, and I have to take probably 5,000 IU a day to get into the 50s. with vitamin K2. So I'm gonna continue to do that. I probably there are genetic components to your ability to absorb vitamin D. And so if you also take vitamin A, which I do, and you take vitamin K2, that can help you absorb your vitamin D. My vitamin D has K2 in it, but I might choose to take some more vitamin D. So then there's diosmin. Now, diosmin is generally good for you. I haven't read that diosmin specifically helps with intermittent claudication, but I had a gentleman come in a few years ago, and this was a man who was obese, and he had cardiovascular disease, and he had intermittent claudication, and he told me that when he took diosmin, it improved it greatly. So I gave it to Ron. Ron is now taking it. I don't know that the diosmin is definitely studied to help it, but diosmin generally helps with circulation, and I certainly give it to people who have other kinds of vascular issues. So what the heck is diosmin? So diosmin is a bioflavonoid. Bioflavonoid is a colored compound that's in a lot of plants. It's commonly found in citrus fruits, and flavonoids in plants have antioxidant properties, protect your body from inflammation and unstable molecules called free radicals. It was first isolated from the figwort plant, Scrofularia, and has since been used since 1969, as a natural therapy to treat conditions like hemorrhoids, varicose veins, venous insufficiency, leg ulcers, and other circulatory issues. It's also thought to reduce inflammation and restore normal blood flow in people with venous insufficiency. So if you have varicose veins, it's something that we give you. Diosmin is derived from hesperidin, which is another flavonoid found in citrus fruits, especially in orange rinds. So the bioflavonoids are mostly in that white pith that's in your citrus fruit. So if you'll get more bioflavonoids in your food if you use the rind. So you can grate rind for a lovely citrus flavor onto your fish and into your salads and into desserts. Anywhere, any recipe that calls for grated rind, when you get that white pithy stuff into your food, you're going to get more bioflavonoids. So just eating an orange, when you eat the sections of orange, you do have the white pithy stuff holding it together, but you're not going to get as much bioflavonoid as if you eat the rind. So that's interesting. So make sure if you're going to use orange rind, citrus rind, that you're using an organic fruit, so that you're not getting any, because the pesticides, if there's pesticides, they're going to be sprayed onto the outside of the fruit. So get organic. And so diosmin is often combined with micronized purified flavonoid fraction, which is a group of flavonoids that includes isoxazolin, linarin, hesperidin, and diosmentin. And most diosmin supplements are 90% diosmin with 10% hesperidin and are often labeled MPFF. And diosmin and MPFF are used interchangeably. I think your product has, it just says diosmin on it. It's used to treat blood vessel disorders, hemorrhoids, chronic venous insufficiency. When you have hemorrhoids, there's swollen veins located near the anus, where chronic venous insufficiency is in the legs. People may take diosmin for other blood vessel disorders. They take it for varicose veins, which I give it for, blood clots, retinal hemorrhage, which is bleeding in the retina of the eye, leg ulcers in the veins of the legs, and venous stasis, where you have slow blood flow in your legs. And it may reduce inflammation in the veins and improve blood flow. So far it hasn't worked, apparently. And we know you have venous issues because you've had hemorrhoids in the past. And so diosmin has been studied to treat internal and external hemorrhoids. There was a study where they studied plant flavonoids like diosmin, and it decreases the itchiness, bleeding, discharge, and other symptoms of hemorrhoids. And other studies showed similar improvements in hemorrhoid symptoms, and diosmin's been shown to reduce recovery following a hemorrhoidectomy when you get your hemorrhoids removed. And then chronic venous disease, it's an umbrella term for any condition related to weak or diseased veins, So that's chronic venous insufficiency, varicose veins, spider veins, phlebitis, where you have swollen blood vessels in the legs, and leg ulcers. There was a 2012 review of some studies showed that moderate evidence supports diastasis to improve cardiovascular disease symptoms or chronic venous insufficiency disease, like leg ulcers, varicose veins, edema, tingling, and quality of life, and even pain. It can be helpful. They showed diastasis reduced leg heaviness, swelling, and cramps, and restless leg syndrome. Still not helping with that, I guess. Treats chronic venous disease by reducing the inflammation, improving vein health, and increasing blood and lymphatic circulation. There's a drug called Venirutin, which is made up by Novartis, and then also pycnogenol can be helpful. Pycnogenol is pine bark extract, and it's an incredible antioxidant. So apparently that's something you can take as well. There was a study of people who used diastasis to help with back pain, and they, after taking 900 milligrams three times a day, that's a very large dose, followed by the same dose for 2 weeks, and then a maintenance dose of 450 twice a day for a month, but it didn't work as well as dexamethasone. Dexamethasone is not something you want to take all the time. It's a steroid. I wouldn't give diastasis. That wouldn't be my first choice for back pain. I would give other things to help rebuild the spine, and I would give collagen and other nutrition to help to rebuild rebuild structure, and anti-inflammatories like curcumin and boswellia and stuff like that. So some people take diastasis for lymphedema. Which lymphedema is so hard to treat. I mean, my patients who come in with lymphedema, they tend to wear their garments. I give them a lot of things to take, and it really, once you've got those lymphatics are compressed or damaged, it's really hard to bring them back. But people take it for that. They take it for varicocele, where you have an enlargement of the veins in the scrotum, and that's a problem because it can make you infertile, because if you have veins sticking into your scrotum, you have higher heat in the scrotum, and your scrotum needs to be lower than body temperature. And if you have blood vessels, a bag of blood vessels in the scrotum, it will heat up the scrotum too much and the sperm won't survive. So you can have that fixed, and then you can be fertile again. It's helpful for minor bleeding and rosacea and pelvic pain. So it's an anti-inflammatory compound and can help with other inflammatory conditions and circulatory disorders. Some studies have shown positive results for treating lymphedema, varicocele, nosebleeds, pelvic pain. More studies are needed, and it's also helpful for diarrhea, headaches, and dizziness, and hives, and muscle pain, and even irregular heartbeat. Actually, I'm sorry, that's not true. Those are possible side effects. I'm sorry. So the side effects are stomach pain, diarrhea, headaches, dizziness, skin rash, hives, muscle pain, and irregular heartbeat. But that's unusual. I haven't ever seen anybody have side effects from taking diastasis. So you can get it, you can get it in various doses. You can get it in 450 milligrams diastasis, 50 hesperidin. And there's different supplement companies that sell it. And there's differing doses, and they want you to take a good gram to 2 grams for chronic venous disease. So you kind of have to take a lot of it for it to work, like a gram to 2 grams. So anyway, if you're going to do this, it's a good idea to talk to somebody who works with supplements. And you have to be careful. It can interact with your anticoagulants, your anticonvulsants, your antihistamines, muscle relaxants, NSAIDs. So because it's affecting your blood circulation, things that thin your blood, it could interact with those. It can also interact with acetaminophen, which is not a blood thinner. It's just a pain medication. And it can also limit liver enzymes for metabolizing those drugs. You're going to effectively have higher doses of the drugs. It can also interfere with substances that thin blood, like herbs like fenugreek, feverfew, garlic, ginger, ginkgo, ginseng, and turmeric. So if you're taking diazepam, you have to watch whether you're getting increased bleeding or increased bruising. And if you do, then we help to adjust your doses, or we try other things. So there are other treatments for these conditions. So hemorrhoids can be helped by high fiber diets, topical creams and suppositories, pain relievers, prescriptions, injections, and surgery. And varicose veins can be helped with pain medication. Compression socks are a very easy thing to do. And that's something you could try too. If you wanted to try wearing compression socks while you're exercising, that might improve your venous return. You might feel a little bit better while we're figuring out what's going on. So that might be a thought. So when people have varicose veins, or when they have poor circulation in their legs, that's something I forgot about, that we could tell you to do compression socks. And so then there's also L-carnitine. When there's reduced blood flow to the legs from atherosclerosis, or hardening of the artery where plaque builds up in the arteries, which causes an aching or cramping in the legs while walking and exercising. And several studies show that carnitine can help reduce symptoms and improve mobility among people with intermittent claudication. Most studies have used propionyl L-carnitine. Scientists do not know whether L-carnitine would work the same. And you're taking L-carnitine tartrate right now. And we did that to increase the circulation in your legs and increase your muscle strength and function. And then one more thing that's commonly used for intermittent claudication is vitamin E. And it supposedly increases blood flow and walking capacity. And so lately I've been telling people that it's not good to take plain vitamin E. You certainly don't want to take DL alpha tocopherol, because it's synthetic, and the L part of the alpha tocopherol doesn't give you the antioxidant benefit, doesn't do the things that doesn't work in your body the way that D alpha tocopherol does. If you take straight up D alpha tocopherol, you can get more oxidative stress. It needs to work in concert with things like vitamin E. And the best kind of vitamin E to take is that with mixed tocotrienols. So you want to get your vitamin E with tocotrienols. It can be annatto-tocotrienols, or just a vitamin E supplement that says that it also has tocotrienols in it. And vitamin E has been studied with intermittent claudication. And back when I was in school, we weren't talking much about tocotrienols. Maybe we were, I can't remember. But I think the studies that were done on vitamin E and intermittent claudication were not necessarily done on tocotrienols. But vitamin E is something that's been studied to help. And I remember talking about that back in the day with my $6 million nutrition professor. My nutrition professor in naturopathic college was Steve Austin. I think Steve Austin is with the Angels right now, so may he rest in peace. So that, I thought I'd give you a lesson on intermittent claudication, because I needed to have one. Now I'm going to go get into some supplements that may help with fat loss. So here's a few. We have a few more minutes to talk about this. And so let's see. So the first one is chromium picolinate. So chromium, I haven't talked about it in a long time, but chromium is something that can, it's a trace mineral that can help to lower blood sugar. It's a component of glucose tolerance factor in your body, and it can benefit your body's response to insulin. You can get it from food and some supplements. Chromium picolinate is a form of the mineral chromium that can be found in supplements. Many of the products claim to improve nutrient metabolism, produce weight loss. So it exists in several forms. There's chromium. There's one form that's found as an industrial pollutant. That's not the form we use in food. The safe form, which is trivalent chromium, chromium-3 as opposed to chromium-2. So chromium-3 is considered an essential nutrient, meaning that you have to get it from your diet. Your body doesn't make it, obviously, because it's a mineral. Minerals in general, minerals are not made in your body. Minerals are made in the earth. So if there's a mineral that you need for bodily function, you have to eat it. So anyway, so a chromium is part of a molecule called chromogylin, which helps insulin perform its actions in the body. Insulin, of course, is released by the pancreas, and it helps your body to produce process carbs, fat, and protein. And when you absorb chromium in your intestines, chromium absorption in the intestines is very low. Less than 2.5% of ingested chromium gets absorbed. So when you get chromium picolinate, the chromium picolinate is absorbed better. So that's what's found in dietary supplements. And it's chromium attached to three molecules of picolinic acid. So chromium may help to improve your blood sugar. In healthy people, insulin has an important role in signaling the body to bring blood sugar cells into the cells of the body. People with diabetes, there's problems with the body's response to insulin, and several studies indicate that taking chromium can improve blood sugar for those with diabetes. And one study found that 16 weeks of 200 micrograms a day of chromium was able to lower blood sugar and insulin while improving the body's response to insulin. So when we give out chromium supplements, that's a common dose that we give. It's well tolerated. It tends not to give you stomach upset. It's a tiny little pill. It's not very expensive. Other research has shown that with higher blood sugar and lower insulin, that can respond better to chromium supplements. And there was a study of over 62,000 adults. The likelihood of having diabetes was 27% lower in those who took dietary supplements containing chromium. Then there are other studies of 3 or more months that didn't show improvement. So I guess it depends on the people and it depends on how they did the research. So it doesn't always work. It probably depends on how well the person is absorbing it and what else they're eating. There's probably a lot of factors there. So it really depends on the study and what was going on. We find that chromium may reduce hunger and cravings. So as a result, many interest in food supplements or medication that can help combat those urges. Several studies have examined whether chromium may be useful in this capacity. So there was a study where they gave 1,000 micrograms a day of chromium in the form of chromium picolinate, and they found it reduced food intake, hunger, and cravings in healthy overweight women. The research reported the effects of chromium on the brain may have improved those results. And they found with people with binge eating disorder, depression can benefit from these from suppressing the cravings and hunger. There was an 8-week study that they found that between placebo and 600 micrograms a day of chromium, that appetite and cravings were reduced. And a small study, I remember when I was in school, various of us, we would have sugar issues, and we would have issues where we just really craved sugar a lot. And those of us who had a lot of issues, we would take chromium, and it would help. With as far as weight loss, because of how it works in nutrition and metabolism, there are some studies that examine whether it's effective as a weight loss supplement. And one large analysis looked at 9 studies with a bunch of overweight people. And doses up to 1,000 micrograms were used in the studies, and it produces very small amounts of weight loss. But the impact of the weight loss was also questionable, and the effectiveness of the supplement is unclear. I think what chromium does, it's more about managing your blood sugar and cravings than it is about actually having you lose weight, because the only way to lose weight is to reduce your caloric intake in a setting of hormonal balance. And if you're taking chromium and you're not doing that, say you're eating too many carbohydrates and all you do is eat less, you're still eating carbohydrates, but you eat less of them because you're taking chromium, it's not going to work for fat loss. So the chromium, for it to work, it has to be in the context of reducing your caloric intake in a setting of hormonal balance, which is going to be optimizing your carbs, fat, and protein as you're eating and your exercise as well, and your rest and all that stuff. So you can get chromium in dietary supplements. There are foods that contain chromium, but agriculture and manufacturing can affect how much chromium is in your food. So the chromium content in foods can vary, and there's no reliable database of how much is in your food. the dietary reference intake is 35 micrograms. So remember, 35 micrograms for men and 25 micrograms for women. That is an amount to prevent a deficiency state. It is not a therapeutic dose. The therapeutic dose, probably the minimum therapeutic dose, is going to be 200 micrograms. I'm not telling you to take 200 micrograms. This is something you should discuss with your practitioner. But those doses, when they talk about the DRI, the dietary reference intake, they're talking about an amount to prevent a deficiency state. Despite the uncertainty of chromium content in foods, chromium deficiency appears to be rare. Because meat, whole grains, some fruits and vegetables, so unless you're not eating, you're going to have some chromium on board. Broccoli is suggested to be relatively high in chromium, that there's 11 micrograms per half a cup, which is not your daily value. Oranges and apples may have 6 micrograms per serving. So if you eat a balanced diet with a lot of different fruits and vegetables, you're probably going to get some chromium on board. There's not a specific upper limit for taking chromium, but I think if you take too much of it, I think you can get stomach upset. But there's no upper limit that's been set. And there's questions about whether it's safe. And they're concerned about if the metabolism causes oxidative stress. But if you're eating a balanced diet or you're taking other supplements that have antioxidants in them, it shouldn't be a problem. There were some kidney problems in women who took 12 to 2400 micrograms a day. See, I would never offer that much. I would probably do somewhere between 200, and I'm not telling you to do this, but 200 to 800, depending on the person and what they could tolerate. And really, in your average person, I'm looking at 200 micrograms, and I might do the either chromium picolinate or chromium polynicotinate. That, when I used to take it, that's what I took. Chromium may interact with some medications like beta blockers and NSAIDs, but adverse effects linked to excessive chromium intake is rare. And the thing is, when you're taking it, you're taking very tiny, you're taking microgram amounts. It's not going to hit your body very hard. So it's commonly found. It's easy to find chromium supplements. It might be something you could take in low doses that might help your cravings. And I would consider it more, not necessarily to, you shouldn't expect it to be like, you know, semaglutide, the GLP-1 enhancers, to help you with weight loss. But you might expect it to help to regulate your cravings and help. It might help a little bit with your blood sugar. So if you have a morning blood sugar of over 100, you might find your blood sugar now goes down to 80 or something. So chromium deficiency appears to be rare. If you're eating natural foods, if you're eating produce, especially if you have regular broccoli, but even if not, if you're just having a variety of natural foods, you're probably getting chromium on board. We used to think about mushrooms having chromium in them, and I think it does. So chromium is something that might be helpful, and what I would think about for chromium is, taking a supplement, and that you would expect it to help you. The biggest thing you're going to expect it to do is help it to reduce your sugar cravings and just your cravings in general. And I think it kind of helps with that. All right. So let me see. We only have a little bit of time left. And I'm trying to think of, there was something I wanted to talk about that we had, just getting outside. I want to just reiterate that people are complaining of having an increase in seasonal allergies, and there's almost no pollen out there right now. There might be a few plants left. We went for a nice walk yesterday, and I observed the plants that were left, and there's still some on the ground. There's some mugwort still happening. Everything is pretty much dying back. There's might be some pollen. When I see the pollen counts, it tends to be ragweed. We have had a bunch of hard freezes, haven't we? Do you call it a hard freeze when it gets down to 24 overnight, but then it goes a hard freeze if it stays at freezing for the whole day.
It's really got to drop down below 20 to get a real hard freeze.
Below 20. Okay. Yeah. But
we've had some frost, but
yes,
we haven't really had anything severe yet.
No, but we've had 24 degrees overnight.
Yeah, but then it jumps way back up into the 50s.
Right, so it doesn't stay hard. That's not what you would call a hard freeze. We've had some freezes,
right,
for sure, to the point where you have to bring your plants in.
Right.
And it's cut back on the... How are your sort of seasonal allergy, mold, sinusy stuff, how's that doing right now?
It's a little bit better, but not great.
Great. Right, so we need to have some consistent freezes, and we're just not getting them. Right. We're going to see 60s today.
We still have
today.
Moldy leaves and stuff. So,
wait, that's right.
You know, although they're not as bad because it's been so dry.
Dry, right. Yeah, that was something I wanted to mention. I was riding on the rail trail yesterday, and it was very sandy. It was concerningly sandy.
Right, because it's dry.
Yeah, it wasn't
so much
fun. So
it's not a lot of hard
pack
like usual.
I know. I know. So we're hoping for rain. We need more rain. We did get a little bit of rain last night.
We need a soca.
We need a good soca, says the old Yankees.
Yeah. We need a good soca.
So we really do. Yeah. So there's another thing I was looking at. If you have mold in your house, you can get, I don't know how much these are going to help, but you can get these lights with UVC in them, ultraviolet C. Mm-hmm. They help to kill mold, and you set them throughout the house, and they can help to kill mold.
Okay.
So... kind of interesting. All right. I think I'm going to wrap it up now because it's about that time.
You're about there.
Yeah. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.